Inc. 20AP 202. Appearances, please. Okay, let me just clarify. Will Brendan be arguing for 15 minutes followed by you for 10 minutes, or is it a different order? Excellent. Thank you. All right. All right, 30 minutes for you, followed by 5 minutes in rebuttal, right? Just give me 1 second. I want to also welcome Union Grove High School. You're here with us today. If you would please stand. Wow, another good group. Well, if you have time afterwards, I'll meet and talk to you, not about the case that you are hearing more details about, but about pretty much anything else you want to talk about. So if you have time, great. If you don't, that's fine too. But the marshal will communicate with me if you want to have a little discussion after court today. Welcome. Go ahead and have a seat. All right, please proceed.
May it please the court. This case is about a Chapter 655 healthcare provider administering healthcare services to a patient. By way of background, Ann Oros was an individual who's 88 years old, many comorbidities. She had dementia, she had end-stage Alzheimer's, she had coronary artery disease, she had various other comorbidities. She was brought specifically to my client, Divine Savior Healthcare, to care for those needs. Divine Savior Healthcare, Inc. is a healthcare group that has on its campus a hospital, a skilled nursing facility, and a CBRF, which is also called an assisted living center.
Is it your argument that all CBRFs that have on their campus a hospital and or a skilled nursing facility would fall under Chapter 655?
Your Honor, yes. The criteria for whether or not Chapter 655 applies first starts with, do we have a healthcare provider? Plaintiffs concedes that the only legal entity in this case is Divine Savior Healthcare, Inc., which, by its certification as a hospital, is a healthcare provider, and as its certification as a skilled nursing facility, is a healthcare provider as well.
So a CBRF that does not have a hospital or a skilled nursing facility, do you concede, is not covered by Chapter 655?
That is correct, Your Honor. A freestanding CBRF would not fall under Chapter 655 because it is not a healthcare provider per the statute.
But what if the services that are being provided at the CBRF under each example are exactly the same? How can Chapter 655 apply to one and not the other?
Good question, Your Honor. The answer to that is a CBRF is not a health care provider per the statute. And that there's three criteria for the determination of whether or not Chapter 655 applies. First, whether it's a health care provider. Then also whether or not there's a patient, and third, whether or not there is healthcare services. So while, yes, you're correct, the services can be the same, Chapter 655 would apply to a hospital administering those services or a skilled nursing facility in association with the hospital, but not to a freestanding CBRF.
But I think, please, just one follow-up, thank you. It strikes me that we're not supposed to be looking at what the entity is, if you will, to some extent, because another hypothetical, which I am loath to get into, as is, I know, Justice Rogensack. If we have somebody who is a patient at a hospital, person gets up to go to the bathroom, not a situation like Ms. Oros, but somebody who can ambulate safely, gets up to go to the bathroom. Somebody had just come in to wash the floors. The person slips and falls. That injury that might result from the slip and fall does not come from the provision of medical services, right? It comes from somebody who is negligently providing custodial services in that case, right? So we would have a Chapter 655 claim just because somebody got injured at the hospital. There has to be medical negligence, right?
That is correct. And I think in this situation, you can look no further than the complaint itself to determine whether or not there was healthcare services being administered. In the complaint, they're alleging a failure to evaluate, to diagnose, and to form an adequate care plan.
Who makes the care plans at an assisted living facility, a CBRF?
Yes, Your Honor. A individual, upon admission, is assessed. There's a conversation with the family. There's a review of medical records. There's a discussion with the doctor. And then a care plan is developed. That care plan can change at various times depending on what the individual's needs are. In this specific situation, Ann Oros was admitted to the assisted living center. We know that she had needs. She had Alzheimer's. She had end-stage dementia. She had coronary artery disease. She was brought specifically there, presumably because Divine Savior Healthcare could tend to these needs.
But that goes back to my, I think, first or one of my first questions, and I'll let the other Justice Bradley take over.
You're on a roll. Go.
Okay. Thank you. If Ms. Oros had been admitted with the same exact diagnoses and conditions and issues that needed to be addressed, if she had been admitted to a CBRF that was not connected campus-wise, physically or legally, to a hospital or a skilled nursing facility, then her daughter would not have a claim under her claim would not fall under Chapter 655, correct?
I think you're correct, but with a little bit of a caveat. If there was a healthcare provider going into the CVRF and administering those healthcare services, then Chapter 655 would apply.
I agree with you there because that's what I was getting at with my example of the slip and fall in the hospital. There has to be some provision of medical services. But I guess what I'm trying to get at is how does the court discern whether Chapter 655 applies to a CVRF or not? Opposing counsel takes the position that a CBRF does not fall under Chapter 655. But I agree with you. If a medical provider is on site providing medical services and does so negligently, then there's a Chapter 655 claim against that provider. But there would not be one against the CBRF. So what is it about the claims here that make it fall under Chapter 655? It can't just be that there happens to be a hospital and a skilled nursing facility on the campus.
Well, I think if there was a legal entity that contained the CBRF, it would be a different question. But what we have here is the only legal entity is Divine Savior Healthcare.
But the CBRF is separately licensed, as is the skilled nursing facility, as is the hospital, right?
That's correct.
So in that sense, the law recognizes these entities as separate and distinct under the statutes, does it not?
I don't believe it does, Your Honor.
Why the separate licensure?
There is separate licensure for a hospital and a CBRF, but I think for the point of Chapter 655 applicability, we are talking about whether or not the legal entity is a healthcare provider per the statute.
May I? Please. Thank you. Okay, on site, end quote, on campus, end quote. It doesn't appear to me that your analysis really depends on a factual statement that the CBRF is on site or on campus with the hospital or nursing home. Am I correct?
You are correct.
So why are you emphasizing that? And I heard that, of course, in the questions asked by my colleague and namesake. Happy Valentine's Day.
and to you.
Thank you.
So why are we using those words? You started it. What difference does it make? I note that the licensure for the hospital and for the CBRF have different addresses. Now, it could be on the same block, but it matters not if they're on the same block or 2 miles away in your analysis. It matters not whether or not they're connected through hallways in your analysis. Am I correct?
You are correct.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. And the reason why I do emphasize that point is because I believe the Court of Appeals wanted to separate the corporation from the healthcare provider. You know, what we do have is a healthcare campus where we have a board of directors that oversees all these different areas, the hospital, but you're absolutely correct.
Is this case at all touching upon mootness? I don't know if it is. I heard some introductory comment about Divine Savior is now owned by a different entity. That is Aspirus. Did I hear that correctly? Yeah, okay. And all of these mergers, you know, go on and on and on. But I assume that the legal entity that now exists, under the structure that now exists, is not yet part of this record. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So we don't know. But your argument here today rests on that it is a different legal, it's the same legal entity, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Counselor, there was a contract for services with Mrs. Oros, and it's frankly almost impossible to read what's in the record. And I have a question for you, and it's whether that contract requires that only certain services can be received at the CBRF and other services then must be provided through the hospital or the nursing home. Do you know, does the contract speak to the kinds of services that can be provided to her?
The contract does speak to the services that can be provided, and by certification, a CBRF can only administer 3 hours of skilled nursing care a week.
Okay.
And that was...
But that's a rather general thing. I'm looking at more in regard to the kind of care she's going to... You said that there was a patient plan, so a detailed plan about if she's in her wheelchair, does she have to have a sash around her so she won't fall out of the wheelchair? If she's in bed, does she have to have a call light available? Things that you might think would occur. Are those kinds of things in the contract that tell what may be done at the CBRF?
There was a care plan developed, and there is an admitting contract which does describe in general what care is going to be provided.
Okay.
But I do believe the record does show that Mrs. Oros did receive health care in terms of psychological evaluations, physical therapy.
She was at the CBRF.
While she was at the CBRF.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
That's correct.
So if a physician were involved in the care plan and the physician said, no, Mrs. Oros is fine in the assisted living facility, arguably there would be a Chapter 655 claim against that health care provider. But when we look at the statute, and I don't have the exact section in front of me, under the definition of health care providers, it's a long and detailed list, and CBRF does not appear. So can you address the argument that the omission of CBRFs from the definition of healthcare provider means that a CBRF is not a healthcare provider?
Well, I think another important aspect of the statute is not only are healthcare providers subject to Chapter 655, but employees of healthcare providers. There are no employees of the CBRF. There are no employees of the hospital. There are no employees of the skilled nursing facility. There are only employees of Divine Savior Healthcare, Inc., which, based on its certification, is a Chapter 655 provider, and yeah, through its certification as a hospital.
So if a social worker, because I know social workers are typically involved in the development of care plans, at least in part at assisted living facilities at CBRFs, if it was the social worker who had the error in judgment in determining the proper placement or level of care for a patient, if it was a social worker who made that error, would there be a Chapter 655 claim against the social worker?
Yes, Your Honor. If they're an employee of a health care provider, which in this case, that would be the situation.
But a social worker doesn't, I suppose if the social worker were trying to administer medical care to the person, then there might be a different claim there. But a social worker does not provide medical care to anyone.
I guess I don't know the nuances of what a social care worker provides. I imagine there's some sort of evaluation, but I can't speak on that.
Counsel, if an employee of a health care provider, it comes under 655, raises what I thought would be a rather absurd hypothetical, but it comes to play in response to your answer. Let's say a nursing home, which is clearly a health provider under the health care provider under the statute, also provides them out of their kitchen the meals for the local sheriff's department, that is, for the county jail. Let's say the food in some way is tainted or contaminated. Some inmate gets sick near, I say, food poisoning and dies. Are you saying then because it was prepared by a employee of a health care center, that comes under the limitations of 655?
No, I'm not, Your Honor, okay. Because one of the criteria of whether or not Chapter 655 applies is whether the person is a patient. A patient is defined by Chapter 655 as somebody who is receiving health care or should have received health care. In that situation, and actually I see my time has ended, I'll let my co-counsel answer some questions.
All right. Did you finish, Justice Bowman's answer?
Is it okay if I finish your...
Yes. Couple sentences.
Yes. A patient is an element of whether or not Chapter 655 would apply, and in that situation, there is no patient relationship formed. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Just a couple of quick follow-ups. The certifications only gave Divine Savior Healthcare the ability to engage in certain activities. It did not create new entities, per se. And I think that's a distinction to be drawn. The freestanding CBRF that is unaffiliated, even a nursing home, by the language, Chapter 655, is not covered unless it's affiliated with a Chapter 655 healthcare provider. But there are many areas of healthcare, and Chapter 655 doesn't define per se healthcare, but the case law has, and the case law suggests that it requires professional services. This is why slipping in a bathtub, as was in the St. Clair case that was cited in the amicus, is not healthcare. That is why the Snyder case, the court determined that under Snyder versus the fund and Waukesha Memorial Hospital, searching a patient. And there was no issue that Waukesha Memorial was a Chapter 655 healthcare provider. There was no issue that it was a patient. The issue was, were they healthcare services?
Why was her fall part of healthcare services?
Why was her fall?
Yeah.
Well, the problem that the plaintiffs have, and they tried that to amend around it when they did their amendment, there was a dismissal by the circuit court of the original complaint. Judge Vogt then gave them an opportunity to amend. They amended. The allegations of that amended complaint clearly are still healthcare. One of the twists of this is that because assisted living is residential, certainly in some regards. For some people, it's very residential. For other people, it's not very residential.
Okay, what were the services that were not performed properly that caused her to fall, and why are those services health care services?
Well, and to be sure, she fell at various locations, whether it was in the home, whether it's the CBRF.
Talking about when she cracked her head and had a subdural hematoma and died. So let's just look at the...
Well, the complaint alleges that she was not properly assessed. The assessment requires professional services. This is not the search of by security guards. It's not the slip in a bathtub. It is not the failure to properly push somebody down a hallway in a nursing home and stopping too fast and jettisoning them. It required professional judgment. So what is the professional judgment? If you look at our appendices, I believe it's appendix number one, page 198 or 168, but we, or excuse me, 145, and thereafter, you will see that there's references to services, the healthcare services. So what are the healthcare services? Things like assessing her neurologic status as a result of her Alzheimer's imbalance, assessing her other abilities to engage in activities of daily living.
So it was more of an omission, is what...
Yes, that's the allegation.
An omission of health care services.
Yes. They chose to have her in a private residence. And understandably, they wanted her for as long as she had to have her independence, to have her humanity, and to have her privacy. And what goes along with that is you don't have somebody living in the room with them. You don't have the kind of, like if you're in an acute facility, you don't have that, or you have less of it.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Ann.
I don't think that's in the record. I mean, you can have shared rooms in assisted living like you can have shared rooms in other places. I don't know about what this record says.
I think she had a private room, and they wanted her to have her privacy and independence. Yeah. So I just wanted my role. I wanted to comment on the amicus because the amicus came a bit out of left field. There's two points raised. One point is these were not healthcare services.
That was my question to you.
Yeah, and they are healthcare services. They're pled as healthcare services. If you look through our appendices, there are healthcare services. It is an issue of omission. They just didn't properly assess this woman with this complex medical condition.
But the question is, who falls under Chapter 655? And as I asked your co-counsel, the statute lists a number of entities and individuals and professions, physicians, hospitals, as you mentioned, the skilled nursing facilities when they're a component part of the hospital. So I agree with you. If a physician or a medical professional partook in the assessment and was medically negligent in doing that assessment, that healthcare provider falls under Chapter 655, but the omission of a CBRF suggests that CBRFs are not covered under 655.
It's definitional. It's a healthcare provider or a healthcare practitioner. And if you look at Chapter 180, it has a whole listing. I believe even dietitians are in there. They are affiliates of the healthcare provider. It's the healthcare provider, healthcare practitioners, and healthcare employees, the employees of the healthcare providers. That can be anyone an athletic trainer their actions can fall under Chapter 655 if they are an employee of a Chapter 655 healthcare provider.
Let me stop you right there because it turns my stomach. How's that for my hypothetical about the poison food going to the jail? And your co-counsel correctly responded, inmate, not a patient. How about if the patient is the one in the facility who gets contaminated food and dies because of food service giving contaminated food? It's your position that because the cook is an employee of Divine Savior, that 655 applies.
No, it would not apply.
Okay, tell me.
Because that's a variation of the Snyder case. You've got clearly a Chapter 655 healthcare provider, Waukesha Mohawk. There was no, like in this case, there's no claim that they're not a Chapter 655 healthcare provider. Their claim is simply not when it applies to healthcare at a CBRF. And our argument is, you have people being treated at home. You have people being treated during the pandemic in offices. There is no venue or locality requirement. It's wherever there's a patient. A doctor is always a doctor. Well, they may coach a little league team. That's not health care.
But the argument is that a CBRF is not a health care provider. Going back to my line of questioning, again, if a medical professional provides negligent care, no matter where it is, there's a Chapter 655 application.
Yes, but and as you, I believe, correctly stated at the outset, that if health care is going on at the facility, then that can be within Chapter 655 if it's related to a Chapter 655 health care provider. And there is no issue in this case that everybody on that campus was employed by Divine Savior.
So is it your claim? I'm getting a little confused on how far you're saying this reaches, Mr. Lieb. So I get what you're saying, that you're lumping together because they're all part of Divine Savior. What if we just had a CBRF that was not part of Divine Savior? Would your argument be the same, or you would agree that a CBRF is not a healthcare provider if it's not owned by a bigger entity?
Well, I don't think it has to be owned.
So it's a CBRF, there's no nursing home, there's no hospital, just a freestanding CBRF, yeah. And this case occurs. Are you under 655?
Yes. If a CBRF, just a freestanding Davenport CBRF or something, has somebody there and a nurse, an RN who works there, is helping one of the residents in a healthcare fashion using their professional
right,
judgment.
Right, then you can sue the nurse, but what about the CBRF? Yeah. Isn't that the distinction here, and that's what Justice Bradley...
Yeah, you could sue that CBRF in that example, but it wouldn't be a Chapter 655 healthcare provider.
So if you sue the CBRF, not the nurse, not affiliated with Divine Savior, does it fall under 655 or not? I'm trying to figure out how far your argument goes here. You can sue the nurse.
Well, yeah.
But what about the
CBRF? If it's not Divine Savior or otherwise, if it doesn't have some employment connection.
But every CBRF is going to have nurses that come in and out, right?
Yes. The question is, are they employed by a Chapter 655 healthcare provider? And if they are, it would be Chapter 655 if it's healthcare services. A nurse can be engaged in pushing somebody down the hall. That's not healthcare services. And we don't claim that that would be covered by Chapter 655. And just the last thing, can I just finish one?
Your time is up. Were you still answering the question?
Yeah, I was just going to conclude, Your Honor. But
okay, a sentence. Go ahead.
One sentence.
Yeah.
Judge Vogt said, it's nonsensical to look at this case and conclude there was a different standard and she would fall one place and it would be within Chapter 65 and another and not be within Chapter 655 because it's all, if it's healthcare services, it's all being supplied by Divine Savior. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
May it please the Court. Drew Deviney of Martin Law Office on behalf of the plaintiff appellant, Kim Andrus. Chapter 655 is not boundless. It limits both the class of claimants and the class of providers who are eligible to participate. The specific question in this case is whether this petitioner, in this case, in its operation of a community-based residential facility, falls within the scope of Chapter 655. It's a question of statutory interpretation. Section 655.002 governs the application of Chapter 655, and it lists all the providers to whom it applies. Every court below, including the trial court that incorrectly granted the petitioner's motion to dismiss, correctly held that the community-based residential facility is not a Chapter 655 provider itself.
Also, but you're not trying to sue the community residential care facility. You're trying to sue Divine Savior, whom you agree is a health care provider. And as I look at your amended complaint in paragraph 21, you claim that Ms. Oros was injured because Divine Savior fails to possess and exercise the degree of care, skill, judgment usually exercised by a reasonable CBRF, and in that it, among other things, negligently failed to assess, diagnose, plan, implement interventions, and evaluate said interventions relative to her fall precautions. So that sounds very medical to me. If you're going to diagnose why she's falling, if you're going to try to plan around it, that would be a medical plan that would be in line with her, I guess, dementia, because I guess she had some difficulties in that regard. So given what you pled, why aren't you pleading there was a failure of health care services?
I don't disagree with the assessment or characterization that these are medical assessments. When a patient is, we are alleging in the complaint specifically that there was a failure of nursing assessment in this context.
Right.
But the question, and I think that my friend over here put it correctly, which is Ann Oros a patient at the time of this medical care, of a patient of a Chapter 655 provider? And the Section 655.002 helps us identify, well, who are the providers? In this case, it excludes, and we can get into the language itself, but it excludes the CBRF. So therefore, she cannot be a patient at the time that she's receiving these cares. And that would be true whether this is a freestanding CBRF or not.
The other side will say, okay, that's fine. Like, you're drawing a hard and fast rule based on the locale, right? Based on the fact that she is in a CBRF.
Mm-hmm.
But what if, here we go, here it's your turn to answer some hypotheticals. What if she's at the CBRF and a registered nurse comes in to check her blood pressure and what else? Then something happens at that point. So she is getting the care in the residential-based, in the community-based residential facility. Then does it matter that you're within the walls of that facility?
The physical walls, no, but it does matter whether you're in the standard of care walls. What relationship is the petitioner to the plaintiff? In this case, they want to argue that it's the relationship of a Chapter 655 health care provider, but that's not true. It's a CBRF, which is not a Chapter 655 provider. So therefore, she's not a patient. She's a resident, at least as you would define it under 50.01.
So if I'm understanding your argument, she's in the hospital, and then she's in the Divine Savior Hospital setting, and then she leaves a number of times. I lost track. You may know the number, but she left and came back and left and came back. You're saying when she leaves the hospital and goes to the residential facility, that at that point she could no longer file a lawsuit under 655.
It'd be hard to be so exclusive or to take that so far. I think I could envision a scenario where a patient would leave a hospital and still have a 655 claim against a hospital. For example, one that would immediately come to mind is, let's say she leaves the hospital and she has an X-ray, and that X-ray says, "Oh, there's a big finding here. Hey, go inform a patient of that issue." And then, for whatever reason, the hospital employee doesn't do that, right, in that scenario, the patient would have a claim against the hospital even though they're no longer inside the walls of the hospital, right? The breach would occur there while the patient's outside of the hospital. So I'm a little bit reluctant to say it goes that far. I think where we have to look at is really the plain language under 655.002, and we have to look at the claims that are being made in the case against that specific defendant.
The issue isn't really where the alleged negligence, whether it's medical or otherwise, it's really not where it occurred, is it, right? It's who rendered the care. And here you're suing the CBRF, but your friend on the other side says, we don't exist as a legal entity. We're just Divine Savior, the whole entity that includes a hospital, and the CBRF is affiliated with that hospital, as is the skilled nursing facility. So could you address that argument?
Yeah, I think the Court of Appeals keyed in on this. Again, what we have here is a corporation. It could be organized as a partnership or any organization. But we have to look at is, does that description fit one of the definitions under 655.002? And the closest that we have to a corporation would be there's three statutes that identify when a corporation or organization that provides physician or nurse anesthetists would apply. But there's been no contention that the Divine Savior Healthcare Incorporated was organized primarily to provide physician or nurse anesthetist services. So we have to look, is there another exception that we could fit a corporation under, you know, that maybe might not, clearly they're not a nurse or a physician. And we skip down to hospitals. They operate a hospital, but even under their analysis, they are not a hospital. They have a license to operate a hospital. We've covered, we can come back to this, but it's not, I guess, germane to your point, but they're not a nursing home. So the only one that this can conceivably fit under, and I think the closest they can get, is under subsection I, which would be an affiliate of a hospital, because affiliate of a hospital, I suppose, is one of the few terms that's not statutorily defined. But they provide a limit here, which is it's an affiliate that provides diagnosis, treatment, or care for patients of the hospital. And that's where I think that I know it's not a physical issue as far as where the patient is, but it's a standard, or it's an assumption of a care issue, right? Who is the patient of a hospital? Well, it's somebody who's receiving hospital services. There's been no record in this case that the appellant's mother, Ann Oros, was a patient of the hospital while she was receiving CBRF services. And I guess to draw that a little bit further, since I think this is the closest they can get, then you have to look at if we were to interpret affiliate to mean that any entity that's affiliated with an entity that operates a hospital would apply, it would result in surplusage. We have subsection H, for example, which defines hospital. Now, hospital is, we all can, I guess, envision what hospital means, but the legislature went further than that and defined it for purposes of Chapter 655. And in doing so, they adopted, or brought in, I should say, the definition under 50.33. In doing so, they excluded one of the three potential definitions. They excluded 50.33B, which would have incorporated outpatient facilities of a hospital. So we know from looking at just H that a hospital is a Chapter 655 provider, except for when they're providing outpatient services. If we were to say that any affiliate of a corporation that owns a hospital or a nursing home that's a Chapter 655 provider or any other provider is also a Chapter 655 provider, that would mean that outpatient facilities would be a Chapter 655 provider. But we know that can't be because the legislature took steps to not include it. And this court has been very clear that Chapter 655 is a self-contained set of statutes, and that the legislature has explicitly incorporated those extrinsic statutes into Chapter 655, right? And we know that through the Chapinski case, which said that folks like my client cannot bring a claim for wrongful death because adult children are not included in the list of claimants who can bring claims. The same analysis applies here. Is the Chapter 6, or is the CBRF included in that list? No. Following that same line of logic, they're not included in the list of eligible healthcare providers.
Why does it matter whether it's a CBRF that provides services to your client that caused her injury? Why not focus on the person who should have provided competent services to her, as alleged in your complaint?
And just to clarify the question, are you referring to the employee who would have provided the initial assessment or the failure to provide?
Well, yeah, because assessment. Your complaint talks about they failed to assess her needs and so forth, and it's what you're alleging sounds quite medical. Okay, so the person who did that must have been a healthcare provider, right?
No.
No.
No, because the definition of a healthcare provider under Chapter 655 is listed, are those specifically listed under 655.002, and their employees. But what we have to first look at is who's listed under 655.002, CBRF.
Well, you're looking at where it happened. I'm looking at who did the act, okay? And all of these people were employees of Divine Savior, who is a healthcare provider, you agree. So I guess I'm not understanding why it should make a difference whether there was a plan in place that was poorly done at the CBRF or whether there was a plan in place done by the same person when she was at the nursing home. Why should that make a difference? Why shouldn't we focus on the person who didn't do a good job of making a plan?
Yeah, I think that would follow the logic of the petitioner's employee argument. In other words, the employee is an employee of a healthcare provider because this healthcare provider in another permutation, and I do say permutation because they had a separate DBA, mm-hmm. But in another entity, even if they didn't have another permutation, is a healthcare provider, right? The problem with that is we run into the same surplusage issues with subsections H, I, and J. Because if somebody's an employee of a healthcare provider who is a healthcare provider under a different context, they're always then brought under Chapter 655. There would be no reason, for example, let's say this happened at the nursing home. And let's say in this case, the nursing home's operations were not combined as a single entity of the hospital. Under a plain reading of subsection J, the nursing home would not be a Chapter 655 provider because the language clearly requires that the nursing home's operations be entirely combined. But if they shared employees, right, with a company that also has a hospital, under the logic, to extend the logic of the petitioners further, then that would render the relationship of the nursing home to a hospital irrelevant.
Well, you know, there seem to be, to me, a lot of links here. And 893.555 was brought up. And that governs medical malpractice, right? And community-based residential facilities are certainly listed in there as to what they're concerned about with medical malpractice. And 655 was designed for medical malpractice, right? And to limit somewhat the recoveries. The recoveries are limited also under 893.555 because you have a limit on non-economic damages there. You can tie them all together. I mean, there's something, you know, a facility is defined in 50.01, a community-based residential facility. And facility is a word that's used in Chapter 655. So, I mean, I don't find them all that separate, but I find connecting them not quite so clear either.
And I think that's the problem, though, is where do you end with that connection? Because you can conceivably come up with any number of examples, and we've talked a lot about a number of different examples. And if we were to say that it makes no difference what care that the patient was receiving, in other words, was it CBRF care, was it a nursing home, hospital, or residential care apartment complex, for example, because that's one of the providers that are identified. One, they'd be brought into this too, regardless of whether they're regardless of the other provisions in 655.02, and again, sticking with affiliate entity, because I think that's where this...
Well, I think at a CBRF, you can get personal care, and personal care isn't health care as it's defined in the statute.
Correct.
So, but that's not what your complaint alleges. Your complaint alleges that they didn't properly assess her and plan for her medical needs, and that's why she fell. So.
Correct, but it matters who didn't plan for her medical needs. So if...
And you want who to be the CBRF, and I'm thinking maybe the who should be the person who did the planning.
Sure. And the person who did the planning would be an employee of the Divine Savior who works at the CBRF. And I, if I could recall the name of the person, I would be telling it to you right now. But my recollection of the record is that this was an assessment that was done in-house wholly at the CBRF. That I do know. And the argument that we should focus on the individual would also create another issue, because you may have an individual who could float between different facilities. Let's say we have a nurse that moonlights at the CBRF and then goes into the hospital for her day job, right? If the nurse is providing hospital care at her day job, she's a 655 provider. I don't think there could be any question about that. But then what do you do when she's not providing hospital services? And that's why I keep coming back to subsection I, because the key language here is the treatment of, care of, or diagnosis of hospital patients, right? And there's been no...
I'm sorry to interrupt, counsel, but I have a question. Do you know the category of person who did the assessment, or if it was a team of employees? I'm not going to say of which entity, because I know...
Two categories. Skilled nursing, so there was an RN that was employed only at the CBRF, and their administrator who was not a registered nurse.
Thank you.
Counsel, would it make a difference? Here's the fact situation. Elderly person falls. Private doctor, after release from the hospital, upon release from the hospital, says this person needs, you know, assisted living. She needs that kind of care. Admissions person is a social worker. So you have the private doctor and the social worker. And the social worker does an assessment based on the records presented, and the person is admitted. Does that kind of fact situation alter anything? Because we're dealing with a person who has a social work degree as opposed to a medical degree.
It doesn't. Again, it doesn't, because we're not under Chapter 655 because of who the person who breached this duty of care, whatever that duty is. In this case, a social worker who's not providing health care services.
Doing the assessment for admission as to what's necessary.
Yeah, and I'd have to know, I suppose, is that social worker employed at the CBRF, or are they providing an outside mm-hmm. consultation?
Okay.
So maybe I could use your problem, I suppose, with the analogies. But if the social worker is employed entirely at the CBRF, it doesn't change the analysis of my argument at all. If the social worker is employed by the hospital, it does not change my analysis, because I don't think social work falls under Chapter 655, because I don't believe it's medical care. But you first brought up a physician. So let's say that there was a physician who was involved. Physicians clearly are Chapter 655 providers. I think, and let's say that there is a claim of negligence that the physician misassessed the needs of this patient. There could be a Chapter 655 claim against the physician, but that does not mean that the claim against the CBRF for their role in the decision to admit falls under Chapter 655. We'd have two separate defendants in that case. The legislature in 655.02 went to great lengths to define the terms that we're using today. If you're at the Supreme Court, you should probably try to use Latin at least once. So bear with me. But the expressio unius est exclusio alterius, the negative implication canon. Right? We can get right down to the last. We get to the bottom of the list, and we have nursing homes. Right, nursing homes are included. They're also defined under the same statute that CBRFs are included under as well. The exclusion of a CBRF by the legislature in drafting 655.002J demonstrates an intent not to include CBRFs. And one of the things I want to note about the inclusion of a nursing home is it's under more restrictive, it's a more specific statute than I. Under I, it's an affiliate entity that provides care for hospital patients, but for a nursing home to be included, they have to go further than just being affiliated. Their entities have to be combined, or the operations, have to be combined as a single entity. So when you are looking at a CBRF, which is a much lower level of care, how could it be that the legislature said, well, the nursing home can come into this, but only under very specific conditions? But your CBRF, if you're anyway affiliated with a company that owns a hospital, come on in, you're a Chapter 655 provider. And again, under that same logic, J entirely would be unnecessary because a nursing home would fit under the affiliate entity argument as well.
I don't think the affiliate argument works because, as I understand it, Mrs. Oros was not a patient of the hospital at the time she fell, and that fall was the injury causing death ultimately. But could you address the argument under 655.005(1) that it was an employee of Divine Savior, which is a health care provider, who acting within the scope of his or her employment and providing health care services in developing the care plan or the assessment of Mrs. Oro. So why doesn't that bring it under Chapter 655?
I think the irony here is that a very narrow reading of that statute, which is, and I grant that the defendants in this case were those who provided the care, are employees of Divine Savior Healthcare Incorporated, and Divine Savior Healthcare Incorporated is a healthcare provider. The problem with that narrow reading is that the irony with that narrow reading is that it results in an incredibly broad reading of 655.002, which would effectively mean any entity. And that's where I keep coming back to subsection I and subsection J, because those are the only ones that the petitioner pointed to in this case that said, well, maybe the CBRF fits under one of these definitions. But the problem is the CBRF still has to fit under that definition for the petitioner to be acting as a healthcare provider in this case, which is why I said at the outset, the question is not whether the petitioner is a Chapter 655 provider. I said, in this case, in the operation of a community-based residential facility, because that's where these employees were working, and that's where these employees were providing care at the time of my client's mother's injuries.
So your argument is a contextual one, that we can't look at a definition in isolation, we can't look at a provision in isolation, we have to look at Chapter 655 as a whole?
Correct. Even for those inclined to look beyond the language of the statute, we can clearly see a legislative intent here, which is to provide or to narrowly define the class of who can bring a claim and who can benefit from being, as a provider, a member of the class that fall under Chapter 655. And when you look at the list under 655.02, you have physicians, you have a nurse anesthetist, and you have various organizations or entities that provide care associated with the care that's being provided by a hospital. From time to time, the legislature has amended 655.002, and we could look again. It's what an example of how they've amended it, with the affiliate entity example. So why would this affiliate entity subsection exists, and I think answering that question tells us why it matters. A hospital, again, is covered, but as times change and the way that corporations or healthcare providers choose to structure their businesses change, this statute allows, I guess, a corporation some flexibility in structuring that. When I'm getting it, and I have to jump back to another example, but healthcare corporation decides, for whatever reason, it would be better to split off radiology, for example, into an affiliate entity. The affiliate entity is responsible for the x-rays and the x-ray technicians, and they provide care at the hospital for patients. And let's say that affiliated entity, even if it's a separate corporation or the same corporation, maybe a radiology tech forgets to send to the patient an alarming finding. Without this statute, this affiliated entity statute, there wouldn't be Chapter 655 coverage, because the affiliated entity, the employee, the radiology tech, to get back, Justice Rogan's back to your point, the employee would not be an employee of a Chapter 655 provider. But the affiliated entity provides for some expansion of Chapter 655 beyond what the petitioner criticizes is a geographic issue, right? The four walls, is it the hospital itself? So this, when we look at why does it exist, it tells us why it's important, because the 655.002 sub I tells us that by example, shows us that the legislature is concerned with hospital care. They're not concerned with CBRF care, which is on a completely different end of the spectrum. The petitioner raised a couple of other arguments. One of them, which was touched on, which was the use of the word facility. So under 50.01 sub 1M, facility is defined to mean either CBRF or a nursing home. The problem where the logic first fails is that the specific the nursing home statute does not use the phrase facility at all. The second problem is that facility is defined with the conjunctive or, not and. And we know from previous case law that a CBRF is simply not a nursing home. They are two different type of entities. So just because under 50.01, the use of the facility in that statute could mean either it's a CBRF or a nursing home, does not at all mean that the legislature, in enacting Chapter 655, intended nursing home to mean CBRF. The legislature created specific limitations in enacting Chapter 655, and this court has gone in many a prior case and addressed the history and the purpose of 5, which includes both benefits for patients and for healthcare providers. What's not at question in this case, and I think that's important to note, is the effect of the court's decision today. If Chapter 655 applies, an adult child like my client does not have standing to bring a wrongful death claim. This case does not question the fairness of that rule. That's the rule. The question is whether that rule applies in this case, and that's determined on whether this petitioner is a Chapter 655 provider. Chapter 655 was never meant to apply to a facility like a CBRF, nor as expansively as the petitioners argue that it should apply today. That boils down to a policy argument, and this court has held that the correct place to bring your policy arguments is the legislature. The language of 655.002 is unambiguous. Chapter 655 does not apply to a community-based residential facility, and the Court of Appeals decision should be affirmed.
But before you sit down, I do have one question for you. Would you just take a moment and please reply to the Wisconsin Association for Justice amicus brief, which, as you know, I assume, says that negligent, they cite a Kramer saying that negligent custodial or routine hospital care falls outside of 655. So their argument is that what happened here in and of itself, just that the negligent claim would fall outside of Chapter 655. Do you agree with that? Do you disagree? Why?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think the point is made that the allegations that we raised in this case are mixed. There certainly was a failure of nursing assessment or an omission of a duty of care at the point of admission, but at the point of this fall. And again, what we're here to discuss is not all aspects and all claims of the case. It's my client's wrongful death claim, which arose out of a singular fall resulting in a hematoma. That fall occurred because there was nobody there to help her when she pressed her call light. That, I think, and if I may just finish my response.
Okay.
That, I think, is an issue of general negligence. The reason it wasn't raised in our appeal is it wasn't an issue initially raised in this case, or at least on arguments.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
It's clear that the issue of whether or not health care services were being provided is an issue. I don't think the amicus is controlling, and I certainly don't think the amicus can amend the pleadings as they were framed by the plaintiff. I don't think an amicus is in a position to create a new issue, which they have created. But with the concession that this is a hybrid claim, at the very least, which we don't really believe it's hybrid, but with that concession, I would ask the court to focus on Payne versus Milwaukee Sanitarium at 81 West 2nd, 244-17. It's cited in the Snyder decision that was cited by the amicus. Snyder is at 209 West App 86. That's a 2009 case. But Payne predates Chapter 655. It really doesn't have anything to do with 655 per se. It is this distinction. And the Supreme Court has held that when you do have a hybrid, it falls under professional services. That was a case dealing with allowing a psychiatric patient to have matches to light cigarettes. And so that's what occurred in that situation. So just in rebuttal, let me just say that we also agree that you have to look at the totality of the statute. What's being overlooked was overlooked in the brief by plaintiff's counsel and the amicus is there is no reference to 7T 655.001 7T. This is definitional. We're not looking for a broader reading of Chapter 655. It's definitional. It covers healthcare practitioners. Who are healthcare practitioners? It's set forth in 180, and it includes nurses, chiropractors, massage therapists, dentistry. Physical therapy, speech therapy, OT. This is what when somebody, this care plan assessment generally in assisted living facilities, they're directed by a nurse. They're also various disciplines come to bear. She had problems eating and swallowing. The dietitian would have been involved in that. If the dietitian is employed by a Chapter 655 healthcare provider, it matters not that the CBRF is involved or it takes place at the CBRF or at the home or in the parking lot. It doesn't matter. It is a Chapter 655 claim. So I would ask the court to please consider the totality, which would be the definitions under 655.001 7T, the definition regarding employee that this at 655.005, the definition of who's a patient, and that exists at Chapter 655, Section 10. This is the exclusive remedy. This is what our citizens of the state of Wisconsin agree to. When they are given professional services, I'm not talking about custodial services, professional services, healthcare services, that require professional skill and judgment, not pushing somebody down a hallway, slipping in a tub, or anything of the sort. As citizens of the state of Wisconsin, we agree to be bound by this statute. Healthcare providers agree to be bound by this statute if they are definitionally established. It is a healthcare provider per the definition. It is an employee of that healthcare provider. It is a healthcare practitioner encompassing Section 180. Healthcare providers agree to be bound by this if they're definitionally applied. And, of course, it's patients in the act of getting healthcare. And we believe that that's what occurred here. We believe that Chapter 655 should apply. And we agree with Judge Voigt. It is nonsensical. That this application would not occur in light of the allegations of this complaint and the events that occurred. Unless there's questions, I will retire. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Thank you for your briefs and arguments. The court will convene in closed conference at 1:30. Take a look at the agenda and make sure the materials are